Elizabeth Elliot says that restlessness makes us cynical. We need certainty, surety, security, and that can only be found in God Himself because He's the one that's in charge of everything. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including God's Guidance, A Slow and Certain Light. As you think about God's unchanging principles for your life, here's Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you again today about a sovereign God and the mystery of pain. I've been telling you the story of Amy Carmichael. She had an accident when she was 63 years old, which incapacitated her for the rest of her life. She was almost bedridden for part of the time she was able to be up and around her room, but she was almost never outside of her room again. One of her prayers for years had been that the Lord would spare her ever becoming a burden to other people, that He would give her health as long as she was useful, and then take her speedily. The last thing she ever wanted was to be served. She had come to India to be the servant of all, and now she was having to learn the lesson of being served by all. And she wrote this, "I had so fully expected to be like the old ox in Mrs. Wiggs of the Cabbage Patch, who kept a-goin' and a-goin' till he died a-standin' up, and even then they had to push him over, but that I had been shedding my possessions, not accumulating them. But now she had to accept the luxury." How I loathe and fear luxury, she said. She had to have a proper bed instead of a mat on the tile floor, a room much larger and more beautiful than she thought was necessary, all manner of comforts and pleasures which flowed into the room from people who loved her. "My only trouble is that I have had so much too much," she said, "when the Son of Man had not where to lay his head." She had begun the writing of a book called Gold Cord, the story of the history of the Donovan Fellowship, in 1931, just before the accident. She finished that book in bed. As I scrutinized that book, I could find no clue whatsoever about the accident, no indication that she was now ill and in pain. But it was deeply revealing of the author's character and personality, as is every book that any author writes, I suppose. As it says in Matthew 12:34, a man's heart determines his speech. Amy Carmichael wrote very fast, by hand, on the table when she was able to be up and sit at her writing table, and she also had a little table that she could write on when she was in bed. She very seldom rewrote very much. These details interest me greatly, of course. I'm always interested in the method that by which a writer writes. She managed to keep up with all sorts of writing in bed in addition to the books that she wrote. I think she wrote more than half of her 40 books during those last 20 years of illness. So surely that would point to the sovereignty of God in the mystery of her pain. God knew that if she had continued to be the mother of that large family, with all that that entailed, it would have been impossible for her to write the books which were to go around the world and last much longer than she did. And I, for one, am very grateful that God arranged it in such a way that she was able to write those books. In addition to books, she would write long letters for the Donovan family, some of them sort of official letters for the guidance of the leadership. She was still considered the leader of the Donovan Fellowship, and yet there were others who, of course, had taken the responsibility. And so she would spell out for them the reasons for the principles and the rules which had been laid down during the years previously. Then she still kept up what she called her scrap letters, letters to her family and friends back home in England and Ireland. and they were long letters. I've read hundreds of those. Then she wrote a Donavore letter, which was sent out to all who were interested in the work of Donavore. And she wrote for a magazine called The Life of Faith. And then she wrote for something called Dust of Gold, which is still in circulation. It is what might be called the Donavore prayer letter, although it is labeled a private letter. Those who are interested in knowing about the work of Donavore Fellowship and reading about it receive Dust of Gold. In addition to all of this rigorous discipline of writing, Amy Carmichael wrote literally hundreds of personal notes. I have seen hundreds of those, too. I'm sure she must have written thousands. Some of them were on the tiniest scraps of tissue paper. Nothing was ever wasted in Donavore. They ran the whole show certly on the thinnest shoestring that I've ever heard of. And to this day, they still do hand weaving. They hand husk the rice. They cook on primitive wood-fired stoves. They wash diapers by hand. The women who take care of the babies are the same women who actually wash the diapers and fix the formulas. So the Lord's money is certainly not wasted or spent casually by the people at Donavore. But she would write these tiny little personal notes to her children including Indian women, adult women who were caring for those children, European workers from Scandinavian countries and Switzerland and Germany, England, Ireland, Scotland, Australia. She remembered birthdays. She remembered particular difficulties that a child might be facing, and she would write tiny little notes of encouragement to them. She wrote weekly letters to candidates who had been accepted for the Donavore Fellowship, and she wrote dozens of letters to one particular candidate, the one whom I mentioned a few days ago, as being engaged to a man who was already working in Donavore. And for various reasons, she was unable to come out to India as soon as she'd expected to do. And this is one of the notes that Amma wrote to this girl, who was then 19. "Dear, perhaps comrade-to-be," it began. There were expressions of warm welcome, followed by straight-from-the-shoulder words about the matter of marriage before language learning. "We do not find that we can lower our threshold." There was a rule, of course, that no one was to get married until they had learned the language. "We've seen the weakness that follows making things easy and not soldierly. The battle to which we are committed is so terrific that only the tried and proven will stand. All others will give way and break at the moment of crisis. Soldiers don't ask for ease or expect it." Ill health then delayed this girl's sailing. Amy sympathized with her in the anguish of separation from her husband-to-be. Once in a while, she would actually send the girl a snapshot of Jack. And she wrote, "B, darling, I love him more every month, and more desire him for you and you for him. He is one of the knightliest men I ever met. Every thought is knightly. He is one in whom a woman's love may safely rest as a bird in its nest." She wrote of his progress in the language, Tamil, of his literary touch, and she closed the letter with, "Now, with you in my arms, goodbye. Blessings on you, precious child, your own Amma," using the intimate term for mother in the Tamil language. She had not met this girl, remember, but she speaks of holding her in her arms. And in another letter to B, she wrote, "To his strength, to his tenderness, I commit you both. You are warriors. And when did warriors ask for an easy time, or no wounds, or no heartbreaks? But he healeth the broken in heart and bindeth up the wounds. Goodbye, dear child, his trusted one, his tested one, his beloved one." Not only did Amy have to suffer physically, but she had to suffer the loss of one of her most trusted workers, the one in whom she had pinned her hopes for the future of the work, an Indian woman named Aralai, who was uniquely fitted to take over where Amy left off. She was one who could go anywhere and do anything, Amy had written. Physically, she was weak due to smallpox and various other illnesses. In 1935, she was ill again. Prayers went up, hopes for her healing went up, and then they plummeted. For 4 years, she was up and down, but by 1939, she was confined to bed in a room in sight of Amy's room. She was so near to me, not 1 minute's walk from this room, and yet I never saw her dear face after one day last October when she came to see me. I could have gone, but at first it was always that she was getting better and it would have made a fuss to go. Then, after March 10th, it would have been too hard for her and it would have meant parting. And we never parted. Arulai died on May 24th, 1939. Amy called it her celestial birthday. The mystery of pain. Can we explain why God allows people to suffer? In so many ways, certainly not. But what we do know for sure is that he loves us with an everlasting love. He proved that love on the cross of Calvary. He asks us to trust him until that time when the mystery of pain and his sovereignty will be unfolded and explained.
Anything, if offered to God, can and will become your gateway to joy. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.